All right, let's freaking go. So, tried to film a podcast yesterday, and the video was looking really good, and then I was looking at it, and I'm like, phone looks a little bit crooked. Go to adjust it. I'm basically, like, off of the screen, and it would have just been a nightmare to crop, and plus, on top of that, I would say that my analysis was a bit scattered and less than spectacular. The downfall of me doing it on my own is my trusty sidekick was in that episode, but we'll leave the mic up for her in honor of Bianca. But I decided to kind of redo it and just do kind of a shorter one that was a bit more organized, hopefully, and also a little bit more, analytical. I was kind of stumbling over my words, getting really sidetracked, because if I'm not, I mean, to be fair, UFC 299 is basically a hand-selected card for Kellen. I was talking about this with Bianca. I'm like, hopefully that doesn't matter. I don't think I had the other mic on. No, but I was just talking about how it was basically like I went up to Dana and was like, all right, Dana, what fighters do we want? And Dana's like, Kellen, what fighters do you want on this card? I'm like, all right, we have to make sure we get Benoit Saint-Denis on the card since we can't get Ilya. All right. And then we got to go Song Yadong, probably. Then we got to go Mikhail Oleksijczyk, probably. And then we got to go Kevin Holland, probably. And then can we throw Jack Della on there, actually? Throw Jack Della. He does it for me. And then I'm like, dude, this would be a little too crazy, but could you get Gilton Almeida on there? Dana hooks me up for my birthday and puts Mataj Gamrot on there for me, dude. He puts Kylie the Matrix Phillips on there. I mean, this card is absolutely stacked to the brim. But there's like a few things that I did want to go over that were just kind of bothering me. I'm kind of like torn between one to start with. But I guess to start with the first one, though. All right, let's backtrack to next week since we literally haven't done an episode in a while. But Kellen went back and watched the Javid Basharat versus Ayman Zahabi fight, and I was gonna make an episode because I didn't make one obviously last week, and I was gonna say like Javid's the guy. Javid is the next bantamweight contender in a heap of just monsters. I really do think that Javid Basharat has the skills to be at the top, and after rewatching the fight, or watching it for the first time since I missed all of them on Saturday, wasn't about to waste my whole day watching them from like 10:30 a.m. to 1, but Javid still looked good, and I did not lose any faith at all in my viewing of him as being one of the top guys eventually. Ayman Zahabi's tough, bro. He is not as dynamic as Javid Basharat, but for some reason, he's just very tough, very durable, finds ways to get inside and land his shots no matter what, and his shots can be devastating at times, and you saw with Javid Basharat, he was like evading punches. He was rolling with a lot, but it just wasn't a good look when Ayman's throwing an overhand right and it's connecting with you with your hands down, even though you are moving away, not really getting super rocked from it. He did get rocked in that second round. But what I just wanted to say is we cannot lose faith in Javid Basharat. We have to look at this from the bright side. Is that maybe this is, obviously he has an extreme amount of motivation, him and his brother, to just freaking go all in on this career, live out of a car, and come this far, and this is only his first loss. I really do think, though, that like him losing his O or whatever could actually be a good thing. Clear the mind, clear everything, because when you are watching his skill set, it is absolutely undeniable. The way that he seems to, I talk about this every single time with Javid, elevate the way other, like he seems to elevate the skill level of his opponent. He brings the best out of other guys, which is a blessing and a curse, because you get these good fights back and forth a little bit. You get both guys kind of displaying their skill set, but you don't really want, you want to be dominant. You want fights to be one-sided, but it's good for the UFC. It's good to have a guy in Javid Basharat where you have that, where it's no matter who is stepping in there with Javid, Javid's going to get his shots off. He's going to throw a spinning back kick. He's going to push the pace. He's going to shoot for takedowns. He's going to stuff takedowns. He always keeps the fight on the feet when he wants it to be there. He never is going to be on his back against his will, it seems like. And it was tough to watch the fight, because if you're thinking about it as like a five-round fight, you're like, all right, I still have faith in Javi. Javi was fighting his ass off the entire time. He was getting caught at terrible times. The visual wasn't great, but it was just a strange thing where I did not lose any confidence. And I don't think anybody that is watching this or that watched that fight should think any less of Javi Bashrod. If anything, it's a great sign for Eamon Zahabi's career, where it's like, this guy actually might be a durable issue for some of the top guys in the division, but when it just comes all around pure skill set, Javi Bashrod's the guy. I'm telling you, when you put him up against guys like Umar Nurmagomedov, when you put him up against Sean O'Malley, although he doesn't seem to have that knockout power, I do think that he can get some of those finishes that he really wants on the feet, because a lot of his strikes are extremely unpredictable. The combos he throws, the kicks he throws. Eventually, somebody's going to run into a spinning back kick to the face. Eventually, somebody's going to run into one of those uppercuts, and it's going to press a button, and they're going to go out. So we cannot lose faith in Javi. He's going to be there. I guarantee it. 2025, 2026. This guy, what is he, 28, 27? He's going to be there. Him and his brother are the real freaking deal. But I just wanted to get that out there, that we can't slander this man's name. He's not a decision guy, even though he has gone to a couple of decisions. He's not a boring fighter. He is special, and there's something with him that we got to stick with, dude. I'm telling you. I'm freaking telling you. Okay. The next kind of thing that I wanted to hit on is the fact that Ilia Topuria, we predicted it, literally mans is the champion now. He's the new king of the featherweight 145-pound division. One thing that I did want to hit on with him is that catching a little bit of heat out here in the world for coming out of a fight with the GOAT relatively unscathed and saying that he wants to return in maybe October, November. All right? And the segment here is, has Ilia Topuria kind of earned the right to do that? And has he earned the right to, like, call out anybody he wants? So I'm going to lay this out right here for you, all right? In my opinion, I think that when you go out there, I'll lay out multiple reasons, all right, for you guys. Ilia Topuria, not only does he go out there and flatline the GOAT, he also might not have a choice but to wait that long, considering the fact that the number one contender by far is facing the baddest motherfucker on the planet. You know, so I don't think he might not have a choice but to wait that far. Especially, I was going through and looking, and Justin Gaethje, it doesn't really seem like a lot, like as quick as the turnaround time is for some of the guys that fight Justin Gaethje. It doesn't really look too good, I don't think. When I was going through, guys seem to lose, even if they beat Justin, they weren't doing too hot in their next fight after that, all right? I don't think. I might be kind of wrong on that, but I was going through, I was like, first, this is quick turnarounds after fighting a guy that hits like an absolute truck. But also, I don't think that they win very many fights after fighting him. But when you go out there, flatline the GOAT, like I said, I think that that gives you carte blanche to do whatever you want. Plus, when you kind of double that with the fact that the next guy that's really in line is Movsar Vloyev, who beat Arnold Allen, and when there's people saying that they kind of thought Arnold Allen won the fight, I didn't watch the fight, dude. I was not home. But Movsar Vloyev, he hasn't really beat anybody, dude. I mean, he struggled with my boy Diego Lopez. I mean, obviously that's on short notice, but I just don't see how he's next in line, especially Brian Ortega. You have to do the Max Holloway fight next. Nobody else can really jump that in line. It has to be Max Holloway, no matter what the result is with Justin Gaethje, all right? And the last little thing that I'm talking about here is that Ilia Topuria, bro, when he's calling out guys above his weight class, when he's calling out guys like Sugar Sean O'Malley, obviously Sugar Sean O'Malley, he can fight him. But when he's calling out guys at 155 pounds like Islam Makhachev, the dude actually has the skill set to compete. He's not just running his mouth. He's not just like a freaking bantamweight like Henry Cejudo talking shit. Like, he's like a dude that can actually go up to 155 pounds and grapple with the best of them and strike with the best of them. The way that he manages distance and then throws his 5-plus punch combos, I mean, a lot of the dudes at the 155-pound division are going to try to outstrength him. But he has the small frame, and he also has the strength to get back up off his feet after potentially getting taken down, but he also has the ability to utilize offensive wrestling and offensive submission, like just offensive jujitsu, dude. So I don't understand why there's this hate saying that it's a big deal if he's calling out this, that, and the other, when you just cleaned the clock of the guy that has destroyed everybody in the division. All right, there's not a lot of options for you. And then you have an opportunity to go internationally in like Spain. Why not call out? Why not entertain the thought of Sean O'Malley? Why not try to call out Islam Makhachev or some of these crazy dudes at 155 pounds? Because there's not a lot going on at 145 pounds because there's been two kings at the top. Now there's a third. I don't really care about seeing anybody else unless we're going to do Movsar versus freaking Ilya in Georgia, which would be kind of crazy. But those are kind of my reasons that I think he has earned the right to call out whoever he wants to. And I think he has earned the right to like wait a little bit because there isn't a ton of freaking options, especially with UFC 299, where two of the guys he's kind of eyeballing, or I guess Max is on 300, but might not have a choice. But yeah, Ilya's a dog, bro. He has all these skills and all the ability to beat anybody in those three divisions. Like the bantamweight champ, if they come up 145 pounder, obviously he's going to smack them around. He can also beat the 155 pounders, I'm telling you. All right. Now, the next little thing that I wanted to get at is, dude, has Benoit Saint-Denis Logi kind of met his match in Dustin Poirier? And this fight has, I mean, it honestly is the most exhilarating fight on this card. And that's saying a lot considering the fact that we have some absolute bangers on here. But in my opinion, this fight's a freaking wash right now. And this is what I'm thinking in my head when I'm tallying up the categories. We got striking. Benoit, Dustin. Obviously Dustin, all right? Benoit Sneaky might not be too far away, though. Okay, I get it that he obviously doesn't have the pure, crisp boxing of Dustin Poirier, but when you come out guns a-blazing against Ismael Bonfim or whatever and throw 10 body kicks, that stuff is like unpredictable. It hurts really bad. And also when he's not afraid to get in the pocket and swing, and he has that power to put anybody's lights out on any given moment. So in my mind, that kind of like unpredictability and power evens it out. Even though Dustin is not afraid to get in a dogfight, he can take one on the chin easy, all right? Bam. But I'm still giving it to Dustin. Now, grappling, obviously we're giving it to Benoit Saint-Denis. He can take anybody in the division down, including Islam Makhachev. He can take, he could literally take anybody. He can take Matej Gamrot down, I'm telling you. He can take Benil Dariush down, Charles, anybody, all right? It's not even a question who's better grappling. When you're so good of a grappler that you're willing to implement plans to get taken down, then get back up to your feet and then look for openings like he did against Matt Frivola, that says a lot about being next level. Then comes the durability. This is where it's a freaking wash. Dan Hooker versus Dustin Poirier. War dogs. Absolute. That's why I'm saying this is not a war god in their Benoit Saint-Denis singular. This is war gods of war plural, bro. Like, that fight against Dan Hooker was ridiculous. The Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos fight where Benoit Saint-Denis, most normal people, like anybody else in the division, that fight would have been called. That fight should have been called. That ref was awful, but I talk about that every single time. Benoit, low-key, could have died in there, low-key. But the factor here is that whenever freaking Dustin seems to fight a better grappler than him, they seem to find a way to his back, i.e. Oliveira and Khabib. And that's what I'm saying is I just think that Benoit Saint-Denis is going to find a way to get to Dustin's back no matter how well it's going for him on the feet. And I really just think it's Benoit is just a different monster right now, man. He is a different monster. And no matter where the fight goes against anybody in the division, I just feel like he's going to make the most out of an opportunity, do some type of reversal, do some type of something crazy, and he's just a straight-up killer, straight-up finisher. So, Benoit versus Dustin is the craziest fight on the card. But, oh, dude, I know what I was going to say, dude. Sorry. Is that the last thing that I was going to say about this fight is, does it not feel like the stars are low-key aligning for Benoit here? Is because, like, Dustin, even though he is, like, I guess 7-0 after coming off a loss to an opponent, it's that when you get a guy like Benoit Saint-Denis in there, who absolutely, see, he does not have any fear of any man who steps in across from him in that octagon. When you get a guy like Dustin Poirier, bro, who's already talking about, oh, I can't do this forever, I know, like, that's not going to affect him in this fight. But when you already start to have that kind of mindset a little bit, and then couple that with the fact that he got knocked out in his last fight, like, I know everybody gets their button pressed occasionally, especially when you're fighting these top guys, but this is just really a really tough matchup to come back off of, like a devastating loss like that, especially going unconscious, because Benoit Saint-Denis, the dude, even though he makes mistakes, he'll get tagged on the chin, he'll leave openings for Dustin Poirier, but at the end of the day, it just seems like everything is aligning for Benoit Saint-Denis to get that title shot. And when I get an opportunity like a guy like Dustin Poirier, the next fight for him is going to be a title shot. Like, if Billy Poirier gets a title shot after beating Josh Emmett, if he gets an emphatic finish against Dustin Poirier, bro, it's going to be crazy. But just the sky's the limit for him. When I watched Benoit Saint-Denis, ever since his first fight, it's just... it's a different beast. I don't even know how to explain it. It's a more exciting Islam Makhachev. It's a Mataj Gamrot with hands, bro. It's a Mataj Gamrot with better kicks. It's just a ridiculous, ridiculous, ridiculous fight. And he's just a ridiculous fighter. But the next thing that I actually did want to talk about, though, is that the fact that we got Gyaltin Almeida, Jackie Three Names, and Song Yadong going back to back to back on here versus some vets. This is like the new blood. It's almost like this is like the changing of the guard, all right? Because Gyaltin Almeida is, in my personal opinion, is going to buzzsaw through Curtis Blaydes. Song Yadong's going to be in for it, but I really like this matchup in terms of size, and I like how Song Yadong is not at a disadvantage for speed against Piotr Jan, and also I would say that Song Yadong does have the ability to change levels. They're just pretty much the same fighter, low-key, in a way. Even though Piotr Jan, if he comes in, turns it on, he's the best bantamweight in the world. And he's shown that. But Song Yadong, it's his time. He's maturing, and he is looking so good as of late. He can knock you out at any time. But Jack Della Maddalena, special freaking fighter. And I think that we've kind of slanted his name a little bit because people are like, oh, you lost to Hafez. Oh, it was tied against Kevin Holland, dude. All right, let's see. Number 11, Jack Della Maddalena going up against Gilbert Burns, number 4. All right, let's freaking see. Let's freaking see. Oh, Jack has to do, I'm telling you. All Jack's got to do, utilize that jab, baby. Get that jab working. Press him up against the octagon. Start ripping that body. Be ready to stuff that takedown. If he can do that, if he can stay off his back and get back up to his feet when he inevitably will get taken down, I think he will get taken down. And it's not because of a lack of skill in terms of being able to stuff takedown. He just gets a little overzealous on the feet when he starts throwing his combos and makes some stupid decisions. But as long as he doesn't start pulling guillotine on a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion, there's no reason why he can't win this fight, dude. And we're going to be freaking 3-for-6 or whatever, 3-for-5 on champ predictions. Even though it wasn't too crazy, it wasn't that wild of a guess that I was picking Dricus and picking Ilya, I guess. No one was really counting Ilya into that fight, I feel like. But Jack Della Maddalena would be the freaking wildest of wild card on there besides maybe Benoit Saint-Denis. But we'll be 3-for-5, 3-for-6 in my 2024 predictions for champs. So it's gonna be wild. My fight of the night, though, quick pick. Fight of the night. Literally everything on here. We're not even talking about Kevin Holland versus Michael Venom Page, but I really do think the fight of the night could be Michelle Pajeda versus Mykhailo Luksejic. Somebody's gonna get knocked out in the first or second round, and it's going to be a war. It's going to be an absolute showdown. Michelle, we get kind of two new guys, two newer guys in the division. Coming up from respective weight classes, Michelle Pajeda, and coming down from 205, Michal Oleksijczyk. I know he's fought a couple times, so he's lost. But Kyle Borjadio is a beast. But he beat Chidi and Jukawani, which is crazy. That fight was really good. We're in for an absolute birthday treat for Kellen. UFC 299, way better than UFC 300. The best fights in UFC 300 are the lightweights, dude. Easy, easy money, easy mini lightweights. But I'm absolutely hype, and yeah. I need to go back. I want to go back and check something. Let's check. Justin Gaethje. Tapalaja. Let's go back and check this really quick. I'm checking Justin Gaethje if I was right about that or not. Okay, so he lost to Eddie. He lost to Eddie Alvarez. Then Eddie Alvarez lost Dustin Poirier after beating Justin. Dustin definitely won after beating Gaethje. Yeah, he beat Eddie Alvarez after beating Gaethje. That's right. Okay. James Vick obviously freaking loses after losing to Gaethje. He lost to Paul Felder. Donald Cowboy. Cowboy loses to Gaethje, then loses to Connor. Edson Barboza. Did he beat Paul Felder? I think he beat Paul Felder. Oh, no. He lost Justin Gaethje. Then he lost to Paul Felder, dude. That's right. Tony Ferguson obviously lost to Gaethje. And then he lost to, was it Charles after that? Yep. And then Michael Chandler. He beat Tony after losing to Gaethje, though. But still, that was a tough, tough fight. Habib lost after fighting Gaethje. A Fazeev freaking lost after fighting Gaethje, dude. Guys do not have a good track record after fighting Justin Gaethje. Keep that in mind, baby. Keep that in mind. What did Michael Johnson? Michael Johnson beat Justin Gaethje. Then lost to Darren Elkins. Yeah, Michael Johnson lost to Justin Gaethje and then lost to Elkins after that. Maybe a stat to keep in mind, baby. Take a lot of damage when you fight the freaking Justin Gaethje, man. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening and have a great day. Have an absolute great day.